This is the Morning Conversation on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Joined this morning by U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Senator, good morning. Thanks for being on with us.
Good morning, Kyle. It's good to be with you.
So right at the beginning, I wanted to just hear some thoughts from you on this anniversary of 9/11 coming up tomorrow.
You know, on that morning, I was running a small nonprofit and got a call at 6 a.m. In Portland, and spent the day with my team just in shock. Had carried a small television down with me. It was just unbelievable that we should experience such an assault like that, that our intelligence and security had failed us on that day. And it's been the loss of so many Americans and a resolve to never let that happen again. And really is a type of area where we need to have no tribal politics, all complete cooperation to protect our nation and our citizens.
Well, I know a lot of people are already thinking about that today, and certainly will be tomorrow on the anniversary as well. During this time of year, you've been out a lot in town halls. Your first one of the year was in Douglas County earlier. Talk about some of the takeaways, things you're hearing from around Oregon.
A huge concern about the cost of housing. One of the things I'm arguing for is we need to kick the hedge funds out of the single-family housing. They are driving up the cost of buying a home. They're destroying the dream of home ownership, and they're driving up the cost of rents to where people don't have enough money left for the other basics of life. Another is the cost of medicine. People are pretty happy that we finally got our foot in the door and are negotiating 10 of the most expensive drugs for Medicare. But I think the citizens are rightly demanding that we should be negotiating the cost of every drug for every American, because we put more R&D money in as American taxpayers than any other nation. We should get the best price in the world, not the worst, and we get the worst currently. So those are factors I hear a lot about, and of course the ongoing circumstances of the impact of climate chaos on our Cascade snowpack, which is affecting our farmers and our ranches, and the quality of our trout and salmon streams. Certainly the forest fires connection, the longer, hotter summer. They need to do as much forest management as possible, which I've been driving through the Interior Committee, big expansions in the funding to do treatments in advance, trying to reduce the risk of fire. But the fires are an annual blight on our state now that never escapes attention. And I guess the last thing, Kyle, I mentioned is mental health comes up in so many different ways. COVID had a big impact on our students, the isolation that occurred. The challenge of going back to school, the impact of mental health on homeless individuals, it comes up in our prison population. So we hear about that. I'd say that group of four things are probably the things I hear about most.
Let me back up to the one regarding wildfire season. Now, here in Douglas County, we've done better than many years, but statewide overall, biggest acreage total burned in a number of years. What are some specifics that you think should be done, especially on federal lands, to mitigate this and, when fires begin, assure that they don't get so big?
Yeah, we're at 1.7 million acres. It's the most acres ever burned in the history of fires in Oregon. So we've lost some 50 homes. We didn't used to lose hardly any homes during these fires. Right now in Douglas County, we have the Devil's Knob fire that's burning south of Tiller. We've got the Milepost 98 fire burning south of Canyonville. And in fact, we have over two dozen major fires burning right now in the state, and over 100 fires if you include the smaller ones. And it's like 100 fires at once. I mean, when did that start happening? But it's a fact of life every summer now. The argument I've been making is we have to invest a lot of funds in forest management, and basically that amounts to thinning, to mowing, and to prescribed burns. Those are the most effective things. I've been trying to get BLM and the Forest Service to concentrate on the areas that are most adjacent to our towns where there's the biggest risk. I'll never forget the Labor Day fires of 2020 when I drove from our northern boundary to our southern and back again, never got out of the smoke. We had six towns burned to the ground, another six deeply damaged. People remember Paradise, California, where we had multiple Paradise towns equivalent burning up in our state. And so that's the most effective thing we could do. In terms of fires, we wanted to make sure the Forest Service doesn't run out of money. And both Senator Wyden and I have been pushing for have a robust reserve that we do not again have what we did used to have year after year, was the Forest Service would run out of money, would have to get permission to raid their other programs, shut down all their other programs, and then get a reimbursement. That reserve has been large enough, and on the Interior Committee, I've really been driving that necessity of having a reserve equal to our worst ever fire season plus some. So it hasn't been a money factor, but it has been that so many fires at once are burning. And when they're burning in Oregon, but then also in California and also in New Mexico and also in Montana and also in Idaho and also in Washington, then there's just not enough air resources or not enough crews. I put through a process of training our National Guard to provide crews, so they're now engaged every summer. But when so many fires at once happen, and about a third of them are natural, and more than half now are human caused, so we need to reinvigorate kind of the Smokey the Bear ethic that I grew up with, of people being so incredibly careful about not starting fires.
Couple other things to go through as well. Talk about government funding bills that have passed the Senate Appropriation Committees, maybe some key wins, some next steps from those.
Yeah, you know, last time around in terms of the community-initiated projects, because I have my team members working with community members in every part of the state to say, what are your top priorities, and I fight for them. And last time around in fiscal year 24, we got funding a couple million dollars for Myrtle Creek's water system, more than a couple million for Umpqua Community College's Medical Careers Hub, about $650,000 for Sutherland's emergency project to provide emergency services that we know are needed when we have things like drought and particularly fire. This year, I've gotten two projects passed into the Senate bill, but until we have a bill with the House, those don't become real. But one of them is $1.5 million for the South Umpqua Rural Community Partnership for habitat and water quality restoration projects. That will help with the Chinook and the salmon populations in the Umpqua watershed. And always when I always think of the Umpqua, I always think of that. Of course, I was a little tyke in Douglas County, and that's in the Umpqua is where I learned to swim. And then $2 million for UCC's boosting of affordable housing for students. So I'm hoping that those community projects, community said, these are our top priorities, that we can secure that funding.
A lot of concern about some changes and proposed changes with the U.S. U.S. Postal Service. Talk about how you see that.
Yeah, the Postal Service, run by George, has really been a problem. He calls his plan Delivering for America, and I call it Delaying Mail for America. It is a plan of shutting down our regional processing facilities. So we carried this fight over Bend and lost that battle a few years ago. Now it's Medford and Eugene, which means every piece of mail has to go to the Portland processing and then return. And DeJoy says, oh, this won't slow down the mail. Well, of course it does. If you have to truck stuff several hundred miles to Portland, then have it sorted there, and then line it up to be trucked back across the state, of course that adds significant multi-day delays. And I collected stories from people across Oregon who said, you know, I'm getting my credit card bill only a few days before it's due, and if I mail a check, then it's overdue, and then I have a fine, and just I'm not getting the medicines on a timely basis when I order them. I'm not able to ship out my small business products on a timely basis. So I've been leading this fight to reverse this. We did get a freeze on additional removal of regional facilities, but Unfortunately, DeJoy had already pulled the machinery out of Oregon's processing facility, so I'm arguing that machinery has to be restored. But he did not just pull the machinery out, he destroyed the machinery. So we would have to get new equipment restored. It makes it much harder, but it's outrageous what's being done. It is the one agency that's in our Constitution is the Postal Service, and it's just been, we've had the best postal service in the world. And if you want to discourage people from using mail, the Postal Service, and thereby cause revenues and cause more destruction to its budget, well, a good way to do that is to slow down the first-class service, and that's what it's doing.
Last question before we go. I know there's some concerns about the state of the Social Security Trust Fund. Some reports indicate 2034 is going to be a pivotal year there. How do you assure the things continue?
Yeah, what would happen in 2034 if we do nothing is we would find that the trust fund, which now ensures that this intergenerational compact is fully honored, would be depleted. And essentially what we do with the trust fund is we invest it in treasury bonds. And so it's not a high return, but it's a secure return. And it decreases our borrowing from other countries that buy our treasury bonds. So that's a good plan. But when that runs out, then we'll only be depending on the incoming supply of Social Security premiums, and it won't be enough to pay about 75% of the benefits. So that's not acceptable. The way that we solve this, A couple years ago, I went through the state and I held a whole series of community meetings where I had people sit around tables and look at the different ideas for fixing the Social Security system, and basically almost every single table all across the state favored the same outcome, which was to raise the amount of income subject to Social Security premiums. That makes us solvent for 75 years in the future, which is about as secure as you can ever get. We should be doing it now, because the longer you wait, the harder it is, bigger problem it is to solve. But people are very reluctant to engage in any sort of Social Security legislation until it's an emergency. And that's an unacceptable dysfunction of the House and the Senate. I think neither party has shined well on this topic. But we have to honor the intergenerational agreement. And I know my kids are like, oh, we're not sure Social Security will be around for us. And I'm like, yes, it will be, because it's a political imperative. We will get it fixed, but we should be fixing it now, not waiting until halfway through the next decade.
All right, we're out of time for now. U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley, we appreciate you being on this morning.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. For everyone, it's summer's fading into the fall, and kids are back at school, and we've got elections ahead of us. So here's our opportunity. I encourage everyone to vote your hearts, wherever your heart leads you, but be engaged, because our democracy only thrives with citizens' attention.
All right, Senator, thank you, and good morning. 8:34, I make that 8:44 at the Morning Report.